Hello, Taurus, and welcome to The Awakening. I'm Eric Francis, your astrologer, for the next hour or so, here with news and updates from the cosmos, or at least the cosmos the way that I read them and think about them. And what I'd like to do in this reading is basically sum up your astrology overall as we come out of one major phase of history, personal and collective, and enter another, because so much of the astrology has been centered in Aries and Taurus. This is an important transitional time for you, and I would like to see if I can relate the theme of what I see going on. And then I'm spinning these readings toward professional and vocational calling types of ideas, because I think that we can all use that now. The economy has been thrust into this gig economy, and suddenly almost everyone is in business for themselves, at least part-time. This hasn't been a thing in American history for, 100, 150 years, when we had a mainly self-employed economy. And then in the early 20th century, people started flocking to the cities and working for companies. So despite many other interesting developments in the astrology, Taurus, perhaps your sun, your rising, your moon, or that of a friend, has been dominated by the presence of Uranus in your sign. And this has always confounded me. It's been going on for 7 years, and I'm still trying to get a sense of what it's really about. Because Uranus in Taurus is like the least Taurian thing that you can think of. You know, the Tauruses I know all live in the same place, or pretty much live in the same place the day that I met them, and they like their old stuff, and they want to eat dinner on their grandmother's dining room table, and don't want their houses filled with technology, and are into traditional, durable things that last. Uranus comes along with all of its power of rebellion and invention and electricity, and is infusing this distinctly physical, tactile, sensory realm of Taurus with this thing that is very unlike it. I mean, the ruling planet of Taurus is Venus. Now, there are certain astronomical similarities between Venus and Uranus. Venus is a little stranger than most people give it credit for, certain elements of its orbit. It's 900 degrees there. There are big clouds of ammonia gas. You know, you would think with the depictions of Venus and, things we sculpt and draw on Earth, that would be the Garden of Eden, but actually not exactly so. But nonetheless, Taurus is about the comforts of life and security and having enough, really. And so Uranus slips in 2018. It's in about a 9-month transition from middle 2018 into kind of early 2019. And I think that the shockwaves have gone through society, amplifying and resonating with a lot of the instability we've experienced in this time. I mean, we could make a timeline of events surrounding Uranus and Taurus in that specific 7-year period and see if we could, delineate something distinctly that fits that signature. But for you personally, I mean, for someone who appreciates stability and non-technologically based comforts in life, it has to have been very stressful. And Uranus going through one sign in any event is transformational. But Taurus is a particularly dense energy field and, you know, more oriented in tradition than in rebellion. I mean, if I were going to get a Taurus person a gift, I might do something like find a vintage tube radio or something like that, or, you know, some antique kitchen utensils in good condition, like a hand-cranked egg beater from 1950 or something like this, right? And Uranus is associated with the rise of the internet and this kind of crazy disembodiment. It's very rebellious. And so I would ask you to contemplate how you have redefined yourself or felt yourself be transformed by this. And I've been thinking about this all day. And I think, I mean, long before that, but I've, you know, had to sit down at the microphone now a couple of minutes ago. And so one of the possibilities is that you went through a lot of changes and are in some way a fundamentally different person than you were 7 years ago, that there's been some deep reconstruction or of who you are. You've rearranged things, and maybe you feel the same. I mean, that's a good question. You know, how do you feel the same, and how would your friends describe you? You might even ask them. The other possibility is digging in, resisting any provocation coming from within to, you know, radically transform yourself in some way. You may have felt this impulse and thought, you know, no way, no how. So I have to leave that an open question because you're not here to talk to me about it. But questions are helpful in astrology, and that is certainly a defining theme. Now, there has been a similar process going on with Pluto in Capricorn. Now, that goes back much further. It goes back to 2008. And Capricorn is your ninth place. And the ninth place is one of the places we look for values, discussion of values. And this is, I think, Capricorn on the ninth for Taurus is one of the defining features of Taurus because it suggests a spiritual values framework that must be old and rooted in tradition in some way. And this can be a sticking point. It can be difficult to update your files. It can be difficult to bring yourself into the present moment with Capricorn on the ninth place. It can be hard to be optimistic and to have the wide view on life that people go to the ninth house for. You can have very traditional values around education with Capricorn in the ninth. It might not be that fulfilling for you with Capricorn in the ninth. The ninth rules education as well. But starting in 2008, Pluto has been coming through the territory. And this has been the latest, but the deepest, kind of a dismantling of very traditional elements of your consciousness that may have survived other important transits. Like in the 1990s, there was a very important Uranus-Neptune transit that came through town. And that had a way of opening people, I think, to other possibility. So, I mean, so for example, someone who might have considered themselves religious just kind of gave that a new concept and they started to consider themselves spiritual. There was some relaxing of the culture's mores in the 1990s, and generally I think it was an optimistic time, but Pluto has gone deeper and has, I think, really changed the way that we relate to the past, the way that we relate to previously trusted institutions, the way that we relate to family, the way that we, well, the spiritual themes are very important. I mean, religion, whatever you may think of it, is at a kind of a low point right now, just generally. And wherever you have Capricorn in your chart, this has been a cultural phenomenon of Capricorn, of Pluto and Capricorn. But you got your spiritual angle here. And so what, in a way, what has to happen is a dismantling of all of these religious concepts and religiosity, and a deepening of one's experience of some form of direct contact with your soul, or a kind of a fundamentalism may have set in. So like Uranus, Pluto has a tendency to push things hard one way or the other. And as Uranus has changed you for the past 7 years going through your earthy sign, Pluto going through Capricorn, an earthy sign that you most certainly depend upon as a point of stability, has happened. And so the question is, where now do you orient yourself when you need psychological and emotional stability? The old concepts are really not there anymore. And fundamentalism kind of doesn't work. And I doubt that you would be listening to me if this, you know, this were your religious orientation. But the bottom line of all of this is that there has been so much demolishing of the old, and this rapid, extremely radical imposition of not only new things, but things that even youngish people can't really wrap their heads around, things that are so off the wall. And all of this has allowed in, or been, well, there's a combination of allowing in and being facilitated by. We get a little chicken and egg going here. But the, you know, the culture that's been created by just basically infusing the entire society with the internet practically overnight is a bit nauseating. I mean, in some ways it's very nice, and in some ways it's just it's like being on a roller coaster that you know, you can't get off of. So let's hold those thoughts and remember that in the background of everything, in this past, let's say decade or so, many of the moorings that you had previously relied upon are anywhere from not exactly the same to totally gone. And the thing here is, you need moorings. You need to know where you stand, and to know where you stand, you need to have points of orientation if you're sailing your vessel across the sea. And if you are docking your vessel in a port, you got to have something to tie it up to. And so I would leave open as another question what your points of orientation are for navigation, and where you feel like you can moor your vessel so that you are, you know, have a safe harbor somewhere in this rapidly increasing storm of digital takeover of reality, of what a person is, of everything. Now, the new transits are rather exciting. And I think that I may have some kind of a theory about your mooring, which is that there's no way to get around how much you need to keep your focus inward and not be projecting your consciousness or your energy all over the place, and like looking for your identity in anything or anyone else other than yourself. And there's some rhyme and reason to the external concepts of identity and of having your personal stability tested, for example. Uranus and Taurus, we could look at that as a way of having your personal stability tested. And belief systems tested or demolished by Pluto and Capricorn can lead to an inner experience. You know, Jung said that religion is a substitute for the religious experience. I would say that a lot of what we think of as being a search for self in some way is a substitute for ourselves. So I've said many times, and you know, explained this kind of on a perennial basis, because I think it's a challenging idea, and I think also a very helpful idea for Taurus, that the orientation of Aries to Taurus creates a lot of tension. And that orientation is that Aries, the sign of initiative, the sign of self-actualization, the sign, the concept in astrology that represents I am, and therefore, under transit, which it's been, I am becoming, or I become, if we make it into a more illustrative verb, is located in a kind of a blind spot in your chart, the 12th place. This is in the solar chart, and it's in the 12th hull sign if you have Taurus rising. So speaking in this metaphor, this creates a blind spot. It creates a, or describes perhaps better said, a sense of almost playing hide and seek with yourself. Well, you're right there, but then you're not sure where to find yourself. It's a little like looking for your hat when it's on your head, only we're talking about something much deeper than your hat. It's like looking, you know, like looking for your hands and feet when you're walking around. That's very Pisces. Looking for your head. How about that? That's an Aries concept. And so if you're in this hide and seek mode, well, it would certainly make sense to rely upon tradition, to rely upon family ideas, to rely upon religious concepts, to rely upon education, professional credentials, ninth house, to orient, when really the real necessary direction of orientation is an inward direction. And this springs up on you every now and then. Like, this gets, you know, fired up. Like, I mean, I wonder what 2016 was about. So there's a lot going on in Aries in 2016. You may remember that very eventful and exciting year. There was a lot going on in Aries in the spring of 2024. High potency stuff. And a lot of that has been about Chiron moving through your 12th. Now, the beauty of Chiron is that it grants this ability to see in the dark. It is about collecting the castaway places, the castaway elements of consciousness. And so you have had a guide through Aries, through this inner territory, that goes back to around 2018, 1819. And I suspect that that was a transition out of what may have been a very confusing time. And it's possible that Taurus entering Uranus entering Taurus came as a relief, because you could see the agitating influence for what it was, and at least also properly identify it as something within yourself. And Chiron, though it may have been difficult and painful at times, has taken you into yourself in very, new and unusual ways. If you're old enough, and I have a couple of people in the audience who are, consider what was going on in the early 1970s for you. And if you're younger, consider what you know about the early 1970s, a very restless time, but also in some ways a very beautiful time. This is the kind of pre-disco 1970s, when there was still idealism in the air. The Vietnam War was still happening, and that was providing a measure of the urgency of sticking together. And I identify this as a time when there was quite a bit of emphasis in the culture coming out of the 50s and the 60s on self-development, real self-development. And I think people were willing to take some chances. But I would ask you what you think of that era. Maybe you can read a little bit about it and imagine yourself there if you're younger today. What was going on in 2016, I think, was quite destabilizing and represented a massive eruption of digital conditioning, which is the conditioning to basically be shocked out of your own mind and shocked out of your own body. And this is difficult because the Taurus people I know are all very physically oriented. There must be grounding in your physical body. One way, shape, or form, it is a real thing. And to be living through a period in history where the emphasis is on this phony electrical astral plane all the time, and this destabilization of self-concept and destabilization of intellect, destabilization of culture, has got to be very challenging for you. And that's what it looked like around 2016. What we now get are two major events that I have explained in as best detail as I can in your written reading. But to allude to them here, or introduce them here, the first is that Chiron and Eris are going to form a conjunction that lasts about a year. It's in effect now. It's going to get closer. It's going to come into focus in the spring, I think April or May, and then that will be kind of begin a nine-month era of the Chiron-Eris conjunction. And this is a stunning impulse of awakening. That's where the title of this whole reading comes from, is Chiron conjunct Eris in Aries. And for you, this is an inner awakening, because Aries represents your inner life. And for many people, Aries represents the inner life that they have lost. And it is possible, a wholesome way to think about having Aries in the 12th is to think about it as being protected in the 12th, that there's something about yourself that you've been able to keep concealed, that there's something about yourself that you've been able to shelter from this tumultuous storm of the internet. And you may have recognized the influence that it was having on you, even as it had that influence. I am so curious what was going on for you in 2016. If you would be so kind as to write to me and let me know what that year was about for you, this will help me round out my understanding. So we've got this this conjunction of radical awakening, followed by Saturn and Neptune entering Aries together and drawing you even more deeply into a kind of very solid inner awareness. That's a little piece of Sitting Still by Kristen Williams, your Taurus sister, with Venus in Aries. We'll have that whole piece at the end of this reading so you can chill out a bit to this, I think, a masterpiece of ambient composition, which was dedicated to her not having to drive anywhere one day. Before we move into a few other topics like money and the vocational topics, there is an important difference between an inner trip and knowing who you are. Inner trip is like watching TV all day or dropping acid or something like that. But knowing who you are from the inside out offers the best that this idea of self-confidence has to offer and provides you with a guidance system that will dependably serve you through this next stage of rapidly changing circumstances. And you will benefit from making that distinction between inner trip, which is maybe self-obsession and solipsism and some shade of narcissism. It manifests a lot of different ways in our culture, versus a genuine understanding of who you are. And the clue here is that the genuine understanding of who you are always has a little question mark on it. It's not the confidence of big boots and a big hat. It is certainty that is just slightly tenuous. It is reminding yourself that you are up to the task, or entering into the task, knowing that that's it. This is what you're here to do. Okay, that said, I think that the combination of these factors in Aries is going to teach you a lot. Now, about yourself. Now, there is a warm-up to this, which takes place in early 2025. There's just so many dates. I guess I can make a kind of a crib sheet of all of these dates. I'm gonna do that before I get to Gemini. But let me open up my superpower Io Sprite. This phenomenal charting program that I am probably the last person to be using. The retrograde of Venus spans from March 1st to April 12th. But really, it is it's a bit longer. And I'm going to say that the important phase of the retrograde, like the part where there's going to be really graspable learning, is let's use approximately March 26th. And I chose that date because it's the conjunction of Venus and Nessus in Pisces. And so what Venus is going to do is it's going to move through Pisces in basically the very late winter northern hemisphere and very, very early spring. And it is going to form a conjunction to Nessus. And this is an awakening event. This is a time to really be paying attention to who your friends are. And also to be on alert for all matters associated with glamour and image. There's a lot of cautions about glamour and image and having a glamorous image of yourself. You know, you want to, I think, the thing to be under this astrology is the working man, the working woman. There's other things that are very cautionary about power and any orientation on power. So anyway, Venus moves through Pisces, the social realm, the 11th place, and then it enters Aries. And we get Venus entering Aries. And the reason I'm being precise about this is because this is going to be a kind of a hologram of the next couple of years. So please jot these dates down. So we've got 3/26. Then on 4/4, Venus enters Aries. April 4th. Venus then goes retrograde. Venus is retrograde through this, pardon me, March 1st. So then the retrograde lasts all through March and out to April 12th. You'll have to sort these dates out. I'm kind of winging it here. But the thing that's so exciting about this to me, in terms of having all of this motion between Pisces and Aries, which is juxtaposing an idea you have of yourself that you present to others versus an idea that you have completely internally. This is going to be a lot of mashup there, a lot of testing that boundary. Venus probes the territory first. Okay? And this is your planet. And so what I am suggesting is that you really track yourself and how you're thinking almost on a day-by-day basis all through March and April, even before, a daily journal, an email to yourself, something. Because that spot where the zodiac ends and where it begins again is going to be, this is like the sweet spot in your astrology right now. And there will be plenty of other activity going on, but Venus leads the way for you. Venus is this bright probe into society and then into yourself. And so you will have the benefit of this. So keep that in mind. Relationship partners, whatever they're going through, is somewhat related to this, but it's important to let them do their thing, You have so Scorpio on your relationship angle. Mars is retrograde now. It's going to oppose Pluto. This is definitely not a time to be involved in any kind of showdown. You want to avoid push ever coming to shove. At work, at home, with friends, whatever. If the energy is like that, let others lead themselves. Let them lead the way and see where they're going. Get a sense of their trajectory. Get a sense of their motion, their orientation in space and time, and gather information. But the throwdown, the showdown, not going to serve anyone or anything. Okay, so now going back to a paper chart here. Uranus and Pluto are still very active, and these are the genuinely deep and provocative influences. There's a few others, but they're like the originals. Going back to, you know, the 18th century, Pluto early 20th century, they kind of nothing's ever the same after these points are discovered. And when Uranus begins its transition of leaving your sign, which it does in the middle of the year, but it's warming up now, and Sedna is already there, as you know, in Gemini, your emphasis is going to switch to money. You're going to wake up one day, and maybe this has already happened, but you're going to wake up one day and think, all right, something's really got to change here on the whole money thing. You may feel like you've got to get into the game. You may be thrust into the game. Uranus in the second place is somewhat famous for radical changes in financial status. When you see that, you've got to make sure you're riding the high end of that and not getting caught in the wave. And so you should be aware that with Uranus in Gemini, which is going to be a one-year transition. I'm pretty sure that this is in your reading. But let's get some dates here. Uranus and Gemini. Uranus going into Gemini. First entry is July 7th, so right in the middle of the year. Then it is back, and then the final ingress is in April of 2026. So we're looking at mid-25 out to mid-26 as this transition. So you get a probe into the territory for a bunch of the end of 2025. But this thing is warming up. That is the thing. And Sedna has already moved from its long trip through Taurus from the 60s. It was 66, I think. And entered Gemini sometime in the summer of 2024. This is putting you on alert that your financial values, basically, to sum it up, need to get hip to the digital age if you want to really prosper. Now, I mean, if you're a potter, I'm not suggesting that you sell non-fungible token photographs of your pottery, but that you figure out how to update your files. And the most important thing you can do is be sensitive to the environment that you're in, the financial environment that you're in, where money has gone from being like a thing that used to be called liquid to now just flying at the speed of electrons. And you, of all people, have to be very cautious about any movement toward the end of cash. It'll be very helpful for you to figure out a way to do as much cash business as you can as an adaptation to the digital age while you're busy figuring out maybe how to accept cryptocurrency for your business or to get paid in cryptocurrency or how to monetize something on the internet. Your traditional streak will thrive on also having a cash and barter approach to your economic activity. The other thing with Uranus in Gemini is it can, second place, this is the more important thing, but also it's Gemini, shake up your whole orientation of self-respect. And this can be a bit of a wild ride. And so we come back to the question of where your moorings are. You know, where do you have yourself anchored? Where is your safe place to tie up? Where are the harbors that you can come in off the open sea? And what are you using to navigate when you are on the open sea? Because Uranus and Gemini in second can really send a shockwave through your value system, through your priorities, and through your sense of being as you express it, as is so important to you in the material world. So we come back to these inner moorings of these events going on in Aries. And remember that values are best run from the inside out. That this is not, you know, you do not want to be setting your priorities based on what others think is important. And this, too, is a major lesson of Pluto and Capricorn, I think, that the others are ancestors and the others are the priest and the government and what the doctor might say and all these people with authorities and letters after their name and all of this. You have to be able to come back to a place where you know who you are and where you're coming from, and you're tentative enough about that to not be cocky about it. That's the little question mark, maybe in parentheses, at the end of the I am statement. Now, while this is happening, Pluto is now underway in Aquarius. And I've been pondering this for Taurus, like kind of every time I sit down to write the Taurus horoscope. What is this about? And the ponderousness of this involves the way that Aquarius is so future-oriented and Taurus is so past-oriented and present-oriented in many different ways, the ways of taste and approach to technology and approach to work and approach to everything. And it is likely that this infusion that you've been through of this electrical, rebellious, revolutionary Uranus and Taurus was a kind of an adaptation that kind of prepared your circuitry for the leadership responsibilities of Pluto in Aquarius. Aquarius is your 10th place. It's also your fellow sign on the fixed cross. So it has a lot in common with Taurus, despite those differences in topic matter and presentation. And the fixed cross makes it a more influential influence in your life. And the 10th is about action. People say the 10th is about fame and about recognition. But really, it's about the actions we take that get the results that we want or sometimes don't want very much. And so, there's going to be a lot of action with Pluto in Aquarius. By action, I mean you are going to feel quite compelled to take action in ways that you maybe have never, ever felt before, because Pluto wants that deep connection. And it's about the deep instinctual motivation. And in the 10th, it's about taking action. And in Aquarius, suddenly, there is all this emphasis on the technology realm that we cannot escape. It is just simply inescapable right now. And even if you live in a place where you light your house with whale oil you still have a gasoline, everyone around you is being influenced by these things, and the whole state of mind is floating on this digital transformation that everyone and everything has been through. Now, Pluto in the 10th, you're suddenly in a position of leadership. I am so curious what that is about and what that becomes. Now, this has been warming up since early 2023. It's been knocking on your door. You've been getting a little messages, callings, invitations, possibilities have opened up. The real danger of Pluto in the 10th is the desire to concentrate power. This will almost always backfire. There are a few people who are sufficiently prepared or ethical enough to handle power, sadly. And so the solution set to this is to work in the most collective way that you can, and understand why it is that you have the privileges that you have. I mean, the thing that always burns me up about this whole discussion of privilege and everybody calling each other privileged, like it, you know, it's kind of like accusing them of having stepped in shit, but they use the word privilege. Well, first of all, anyone listening to this reading is pretty privileged. You know, you're in a dry building, most likely, and you have food in the refrigerator, most likely, and you have time to think about your growth. And it's not just time to think about scrambling for the next meal. But what's always burned me up is it's never really portrayed. Privilege is never portrayed in the context of, well, what do you do with your privilege? So you have privilege. How then do you exercise it? What do you do? How do you treat people? What is your theory of why you have that privilege or how you got it? And a lot of people with a lot of privilege are kind of jerks. And there's very little humility around all these gifts that we have so graciously received or earned, the sweat of our brow every day. This should, I think, keep us in a state of humility and of service. There's a few other influences in Aquarius in your 10th house. There's two centaurs came in around the same time as Pluto, Aureus and Amicus. Amicus shouldn't really be called Amicus. I mean, that's what it was named, but it really should be called, like, what's the word I'm thinking of? Animus. Change the name from Amicus to Animus. Aureus is more adventurous, more enterprising, more bold. Prominent charts of people like Steve Jobs and Nelson Mandela. That's something. So we are going to experience disruptions with Pluto and Aquarius, and you will have a chance to benefit from those disruptions. So when you see or experience a disruption, particularly, for example, in the business world of some kind, ask yourself what you can now do and ask yourself why you would do it, what the result would be that you want to get from that action. So, you know, Aries tucked in the 12th can have a bit of unconscious, who am I? What do I want? Who am I? What do I want? Who am I? What do I want? But the astrology now is saying, like, get over it. You got to know who you are and what you want. Maybe with a question mark in parentheses. And this will be very important when you find yourself confronted, for example, by some disruption in the business world. The question is what to do. We experienced just such a disruption in 2020, where suddenly every last damn thing about society was disrupted. Things that no one ever believed would have been possible for any reason whatsoever. Suddenly the entire society was in a state of siege. Well, what did that invite you to do? What did that invite you to be? I think that from the look of where the Saturn-Pluto conjunction happened, might have been in quite a bit of fear and not seeing that as a way to explore something creative. Who knows? You know. But that's the nature of Pluto in the 10th. We're going to be in a society that will be increasingly defined by social and technological disruptions. Some of them may be developments that shock people even further out of their own intelligence. Now, the 10th is one place of work. It's one place where we go to work. The other place we go to work is the 6th. And you have kind of a perfect 6th house. Libra is a very, very nice sign to have as the 6th place from your sign. Libra is highly energetic, for one thing. It is oriented on things that you just love, like balance and beauty. I mean, Libra is kind of a modern version of Taurus. It doesn't have the past orientation that Taurus has. And it's not that there are not some freaking wildly innovative Taurians. My favorite among them is David Byrne, who's tied for first place with Brian Eno. These people completely recreated music in the 1970s in the most outrageous way, and their work stands up. But Libra is always an influence in such a series of developments. And the message coming through Libra for you is, first, be relational in all that you do. And the second message coming through Libra is, be concise in the idea that you embody, because you will benefit the most from embodying your idea, from being the message, not from being a messenger or for experimenting with the message, but rather being the embodying what you deliver. And there's a dialogue going on between Aries and this self of yours that is kind of concealed and protected, waiting in the wings, and Libra, how you express yourself with what you do every day. You know, the 6th house is more of the house of what you do every day, and the 10th is more of what you build in the long term, and your concept for how you do that, for the big direction of travel. But where you get in the car and go to work, or you put on some clothes and you walk into another room, whatever, whether you stay home or not, that's Libra for you. That's the quotidian day-to-day affairs and activity and the actual service that you provide. And so you really want to understand what it is you're doing. And you can't ask that question often enough about what it is that you're doing. You know, keep that probing sense of experimentation alive at all times. In this house as well, there is likely to be a tremendous amount of opportunity created through disruption. And I want to be clear that I'm not saying to benefit from the pain of others, but rather to recognize that disruption will give you opportunities to express yourself in ways that would have been otherwise impossible, to build something where once something else stood without having to tear that thing down, for example. And your role in this, I think, with the influence being Zeus, a kind of a super Jupiter directly involved. I've drawn a line across that. It's the red line, and it can't really, my glyphs are kind of uninterpretable, but the one that's at the top of house number 6 is this point called Zeus. And so the ideal way that you would recognize your potential role in the midst of a disruption is through some form of genuinely mutual benefit. So that needs to be an idea. It needs to be one of the little utilities of your Swiss Army knife, and potentially even a guiding principle that no one should really be left out, and that you have capacity to address some very deep concerns that are going to arise under the conjunction of Chiron and Eris, and that your nature as someone who is so grounded naturally, we don't know what the digital age has done to you, we don't know what Uranus and Taurus has done to you, but your primary orientation is to be so grounded in physicality and in the sensual world that that may be where you provide a number of very important points of grounding. And there will be a lot in the way of opportunity there. I want to comment briefly on something I don't think I've mentioned anywhere else. When you arrive at the truth of your most intimate relationships, there will always be a spiritual connection. There's a lot of ways we can connect to people. We can connect to them through sex. We can connect to them through common interests. We can connect with them through having children. We can connect with them through some kind of a monetary adventure. But what it means to have Sagittarius oriented in the way that it is in your chart, in place 8, there is the most glorious opening for you to share profoundly spiritual connections with others. And this, I think, can be a thing that informs all of your relationships in some way, particularly where there is any exchange of any resource whatsoever. The 8th generally is about financial and sexual resources. What other kind of resources are there? Gold ore, or whatever, right? Water, right? That's an important. That's the modern day gold or oil. And so, what Sagittarius on the 8th is suggesting that you keep teaching yourself is to respond when the spiritual connection is there, in a positive way, to trust in spiritual connection primarily above all things, and to have that idea be your point of orientation and mooring with anyone who enters your life. Now, what is spiritual? Well, spiritual is some sense that there is something much larger and indescribable in our existence that we don't really have good words for, and that society is very good at playing games with. And there were times when there's been a tremendous amount of planetary activity in Sagittarius, the mid 2000s and beyond that for a while. And now that activity is largely cleared up. And so this has left a clear view of things that are often quite concealed. And by clear view, I mean the ability to have a direct experience of. And so there is something about this concept that I'm using and have long resisted, spiritual, that talks about the life beyond physicality, the life beyond the body, The thing about existence we don't know and can't really do anything about except to choose how we relate to it. And this is very safe territory for you, though it requires a measure of vulnerability, it requires a measure of humility, and it requires understanding that the partnerships that you engage in are, in most ways, a very small thing in a very large universe, and that you owe your existence to that universe, and that your existence and the fact that you're able to relate to people in the ways that you are a tremendous mystery that no one has a right to define for you or to capitalize on for you. And what I am suggesting is that you face the mystery and let the mystery stand rather than trying to fill it in with some explanation of some kind, or asking yourself whether an experience that you had is real. And the way is wide open right now for some very deep experiences of sharing and relating, and to have that be not only something that is special, but something that is ordinary, that you take with you everywhere you go, that your understanding with yourself embraces on a day-to-day level, whether you're stuck in traffic or doing something you don't necessarily want to do very much, or relating to someone that you don't like very much, to keep coming back to this central thing about your life and everyone else's life that is so often just kind of blown off. Now, one last point, returning back to Capricorn. Pluto's journey through your ninth house has left a legacy, and this is something that's very, very Taurian, I think, and quite beautiful. You are a kind of personal embodiment of the taps into tradition that are under siege right now. You have the ability to kind of journey back and remain in contact with the core inspiration behind the most important traditions that have guided humanity through this quite perilous world that we are in. So let yourself be that source of wisdom, first for yourself, and then for the people around you. All right, signing off on winter solstice, Capricorn solstice in Kingston. I leave you in the capable hands of Kristen Williams. Again, the song is called Sitting Still. Lots of love, and bye for now.